And live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny, slave South Pacific, plagued by technical difficulties, of course caused by Mossad. I'm joking.
Or am I?
And I have a guest today, and I realised something yesterday. Man, we have a lot of very diverse guests. We put the variety into variety show. So today we have a man named Troy McLaughlin. Troy, can you hear me?
I can, Vinny. Can you hear me?
You're coming through just fine. Would you be able to tell me and the audience just a little bit of background about yourself, and make sure you plug your website in there too?
Thanks, Vinny. I put up a website called satanddeathcult.com. It's a it sounds like a website or a book. There's also an ebook version of the website that's sold on the Kindle format and such, but it sounds like a book and website that basically involves stories of Satan worshippers, pagan serial killers, and connections to the usual suspects linked in with the New World Order, and it's all seeing an eye, but it's not, so it's probably a bit of a disappointment to some online gore junkie types. But what it actually is an introduction to a radical new cosmology called Saturn theory. And this theory completely rewrites the history of the solar system by reassessing world mythology and giving it an actual historical context in terms of being the record of interplanetary catastrophes actually witnessed by humans within historical times. This subsequently brings into serious doubt the validity of many so-called occult belief systems, particularly those belief systems that seek a rebirth or transformation of the human species via ritualistic genocide of the planet's so-called useless eaters. That's where the death aspect comes into the title, while the Saturn connection is the supposed justification these groups believe they have by invoking the mythical god Saturn and his mythical golden age in justifying their extremely self-interested plans for humanity's future. The website basically goes to the root of the supposed hidden mysteries and secrets claimed by these occult groups, which they have gleaned from a thoroughly corrupted interpretation of mythology. It's an interpretation that I believe Saturn theory completely discredits. So if one accepts the tenets behind Saturn theory, then those active New World Order occultist types are not simply threatened with an emperor's new clothes type of exposure. They're literally emasculated in their so-called divine claims to having the right to rule.
In other words, everything that they've believed their entire lives will have the rug pulled out from under them. The exact same thing that's happened to all of us.
Yes, you could actually say that that's what Saturn theory does to the occult belief systems. And I have to say as well, to many religious systems.
I wanted to actually ask something on those lines. I was listening to one of the rebroadcasts from Hilary Ramo, who I had on the show the other day. This guy named Saeed, he keeps proposing to her all the time. And I said on my way out to break that when you get married, you put a ring on your finger, and that's actually a ring of Saturn, which is a sign of bondage. Was that true, or was I blowing smoke up my own ass?
No, there's a lot of significance in the ring mythology and so on to do with that. It's not linked to Saturn, but it is linked to slavery. It's often where you get the ring in the bull's nose, going back to Minotaur mythology, stuff like that. If you know the history, the mythology involved with the Minotaur, basically the slayer of maidens. You get that kind of connection with rings. Very dodgy.
Mm-hmm. Well, when it comes to the occult, dodgy seems to be the name of the game. And it's surprising when you first start looking into it just how many of your leaders, really, whether they be business leaders, media leaders, politicians, etc., are all deeply, deeply into this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. In Saturn Death Cult, I make the case that probably the most overt manifestation of what I call the Saturn Death Cult is actually the international monetary system. The current central banking model is highly connected into much of the distortion that comes from Saturnian mythology. As it is, basically, there is a means of control, and the occult side just adds the spiritual justification for wanting to create a system of control based on debt slavery, which is the modern financial system. It's basically their way of deciding that they that they have justification. Now, that applies both to the types that claim a form of nobility. But it also applies to those that exist in the what I would call the merchant banking class of people, and occult beliefs do come into that. There is the rather sordid topic of ritual sacrifice that is a big part of this, and these people have to have some kind of what they think is spiritual justification to be involved in such acts.
Well, they allegedly, and this is according to a South Park episode, reckon that when you rape children, you wind up getting some of their little youth energy and it extends your life.
Yes, the Poe, as they call it in certain occult circles. There is a particularly disgusting element to certain occult beliefs on that. It's really directly related back into mythology, where the creative force called Saturn is recorded in mythology as having eaten his own children in an attempt to stop them growing up and usurping his crown. Now, there are plenty of distortions, versions of that, down through various belief systems, even certain religions. But that's where the blood sacrifice and even cannibalistic acts actually has its genesis in. When you look at the cosmology offered by Saturn theory, which is it's basically an offshoot of a new science called the Electric Universe, which basically provides a non-gravity-only look at how the solar system works and incorporates electricity as a power, as a source of energy, acting on planets, acting on celestial bodies. When you look at Saturn theory, you can see that mythology is really a record of some of the planetary interactions that were taking place, viewed by humans in the past.
Well, could you actually elaborate on that?
Yeah, probably the best way to start with Saturn theory is this. In all mythology, and it starts with a look at mythology, comparative mythologists have always known that the original sun, or Saturn, was placed in what is called Earth's celestial north. And Earth's celestial north, or true north, is that area where, which is now occupied by what we call Polaris, or the pole star. Now, it seems so incongruous with what we see today that many people looked at mythology and said there has to be a bunch of fairy tales. The sun rises in the east, sets in the west. How did we ever create a situation with this idea that there was a sun in the celestial part of the sky? But that's actually what mythology seems to tell us. And so we're left with the impression that sun worship in mythology is based on the sun that we see today, whereas certain comparative mythologists began to ask, did they in fact see a different sun sitting up in the celestial north, above the north pole of the planet? And this was when electric universe concepts and the work done by people like Velikovsky to start off, who wrote a book called Worlds and Collisions back in the collision back in the 1950s, and people who have followed in that path of investigation have started to believe that in fact what was witnessed in relatively recent times was a giant body, a giant celestial body, did actually sit in the celestial north, where it shone as a sun in its own right, and that this celestial body is now the planet Saturn that is banished to the outer realms of the solar system, but before had existed as a sun. And that kind of configuration, where you have a large celestial object set up in the celestial north, is what's called the polar configuration. And, of course, this is something completely preposterous to most scientists, mainstream scientists today, particularly astrophysicists, that it's often rejected. But it does form the base of what is called Saturn theory.
Okay. And, of course, to the average person, this is like, what? But but for those you know, people like you and I who are somewhat familiar with the occult, I can't say that I've ever actually engaged knowingly in dark occult rituals where I sacrifice children. But what's the likelihood, though, that this kind of do you think that it's sort of a bit mad to believe in this sort of stuff and worship these gods and what have you, or is there actually something to it?
Well, yes, it's completely mad. I see it as a complete distortion of what was actually witnessed and recorded. What this actually goes to is an event that is called Doomsday in the mythological record. We get the stories of Atlantis sinking under the waves and generally a huge cataclysm taking over the planet. And what comparative mythologists who take this Saturn theory concept as an explanation believe is that the this signified the moment in history when Saturn fell from its position in the north polar regions and basically began the process which saw it ending up way out into the outer parts of the solar system. Probably if I just backtrack a little bit, give your listeners a slightly better idea of where comparative mythologists are. A quote from Duardo Cardona, who's one of the leading investigators in this, would probably be good here. I quote, "The evidence of myth which points to Saturn having once occupied a position above Earth's north polar regions is voluminous. There is not a race on Earth that has not preserved at least one account which states as much. According to this evidence, Saturn occupied a central position in the north celestial regions. It rotated and rotated widely, but other than that, it was immovable. This is the midnight sun of Egyptian mythology, the sun that shines at night, which it would do if it was in that position, and the stationary sun of innumerable ancient mythological texts that we read from Mesoamerica, even to the legends down here in the South Pacific, where we have the Polynesian legends and people chiming in with this idea that a huge object sat up in the celestial north. Now, what's mad is later the interpretation that once the sky settled down to the one that we see today, it becomes almost impossible to believe that such a configuration existed, that you had this giant object up in the north. And the records that talk about this become reinterpreted and basically personified. You start giving personal references to persons for the various characters involved. And the descriptions, when looked at as if it were for the embodiment of spirits or gods, these interpretations lead people to believe that certain acts were committed, such as cannibalism, such as ritual sacrifice, and that's where the rot settles in, in the long term. One of the core problems in dealing with Saturn theory is this idea that modern science has given us, and that is that the what we see today is the key to understanding the past. And with that, what we do is extrapolate back into time from what we see today. And that
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off there, Troy, sure. And because we're coming off to break now. Troy McLaughlin is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about the Saturn Death Cult, and we're going to be running rings around this puppy, I can assure you. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. It's the fastest 2 hours in talk radio on the biggest, baddest, most fabulous truth-loving network in the continental US and around the world. It's American Freedom Radio. Hey, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I do have to give big ups not only to American Freedom Radio itself and all the remarkably, ridiculously, extraordinary hard work and good work that they do, but also to all the other radio show hosts on this network as well. I do try from time to time to get other show hosts from this network onto this show, and they always, always impress, I can assure you. So after you finish listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show today, if you're listening to it live, of course, keep listening. Tune in beforehand as well. Tune in for all day if you want, and I can assure you, you will be very, very impressed. And that was the first thing that I noticed when I first became a part of this network, is that unlike talk radio here in New Zealand, where you might have a couple of hours of one show per week, that's like just top-notch quality, American Freedom Radio, it's relentless. Troy McLaughlin from the Saturn Death Cult is my guest. Welcome back, Troy.
Thanks, Vinny.
Where did we leave off?
Basically, we were looking at the evidence for a polar configuration with the planet Saturn sitting up in the north celestial realms of the planet in the distant past, a sky that was very, very different to the one we see today.
Okay. Now, I've got a random element here. I'm not sure the validity of this, but I play a computer game called Dawn of War, and it's based 40,000 years in the future. And you know the double-headed eagle that's the auto ab KO 33rd degree of Freemasonry symbol?
I don't know it, but I do know of the double-headed eagle motif.
Well, this game... there's like the imperial forces of man, right? And that's their symbol, the two-headed eagle. And I have serious doubts that that's a coincidence. There's also another race called the Eldar, and they have an all-seeing eye as their symbol. I doubt that's a coincidence. Now, also, there's a planet where they had these massive mining operations, right? Huge mining operations, and there was some enormous industrial accident. And what happened was it killed the planet, and it forced huge amounts of rocks and debris to form a ring around that planet and left it as a desert planet with these rings around it. Now, I'm wondering, is there any correlation here between the forming of Saturn's rings and that fictional debacle there? Was there some kind of disaster and then suddenly it formed its rings?
Yeah, Vinny, this is the crux of where the hard science comes into looking into the Saturn theory concept. It's incumbent on people who make these claims that Saturn once sat up there in the north, to come up with basically a working model. And the idea behind Saturn being in that position is largely explained in Saturn theory as Saturn having once been a sub-brown dwarf star that was floating out in space in its own right with its own system of planets strung out below it like a basically like a string of beads. Now, to keep the listeners from being encumbered with too much detail, what we need to sort of visualize here is a sub-brown dwarf star with two planets strung out below it, the first being Mars, followed at the very bottom by Earth itself. And when you look up from a position on Earth's northern hemisphere, what you would be confronted with is basically a stationary glowing disk that would have had the pupil of an eye in the middle of it. And that would, of course, be in the silhouette of Mars. Now, in Electric Universe thinking, the whole of the universe and all its stars are basically electrical discharge phenomena, not these controlled nuclear explosions that go on for an inordinate amount of time. And what happens when stars come into close contact with each other? Their plasma sheaths, or in the case of the Sun, its heliospheres, come into contact first. Now, what a sub-brown dwarf star has is a huge bubble around it that is analogous with the Sun's heliosphere. And in sub-brown dwarf stars, these plasma sheaths or plasma spheres are opaque if you're inside the bubble that this creates. And when this plasma sheath brushes up against another plasma sheath, there is an electrical interaction that takes place. And the result is that the sub-brown dwarf star would go into a mini flare, like a small nova. And in doing so, it erupts into a bright blast of light. And in fact, what you get is a discharge from the from that star, which in terms of Saturn theory is what ultimately produced the rings around Saturn. Now, how that works in Saturn theory is this takes place when the sub-brown dwarf star that would become Saturn with its planets comes into contact with the Sun as we know it today, and basically is captured by the Sun, and with the Sun being a red giant star, its electrical properties are overwhelmed by the Sun. It flares. The plasma sheaf around Saturn becomes transparent. And whatever is inhabiting the Earth at that time is suddenly exposed to a completely new universe. And so going back to your video game, the idea that rings can form as a result of catastrophic actions is pretty close to the mark. Does that make sense?
It does, and it just goes to show you that all the works of fantasy are based on works of reality.
Oh, yeah, science fiction is, in many respects, way ahead of mainstream science and finding, in checking the source stuff out. I go back to mythology itself. If you read mythology as a literal interpretation, and try to disconnect yourself from the idea that our solar system has been exactly as it is for billions of years, you get a completely different sky to the one we see today, and that really is at the base of it. I think in order to give people an even better basis to this Saturn theory idea, we have to get back to what in mythology is called the Golden Age. The Golden Age is that mythical time when Saturn ruled, and Saturn being the god of time, known in other mythologies as Kronos, and there is a whole list of mythological gods that have what's called Saturnian qualities. Ra, Altum Osiris from Egyptian mythology, Quetzalcoatl from the Mayan, Yima from the Persian, Hung Ti from China. All of these gods in mythology all share the same attributes. And what you have is a time in history when things were wonderful for human beings. They didn't have to work. The earth yielded its fruit without any seasonal variations or anything along those lines. Now, that all began in the various creation myths, the most famous, of course, being the Bible, with a statement, and it's best summed up by the biblical statement, which is that moment that says, "Let there be light." This is what I'm referring to as having been the nova, the mini-nova that Saturn underwent on coming into contact with the Sun's electrical influence. And basically, from that nova period to the point when it's postulated Saturn fell from its position, i.e. the falling of the god Saturn, who is in mythology murdered by his son Zeus or Jupiter in the Roman mythologies, you have that period of what is called the Golden Age. And that forms the basis of the beginning of civilization, according to the mythological interpretation of history.
Makes sense? Now, there are some who believe that in the present moment we are heading towards a new golden age. Do you believe that as well?
I believe that the occult element believes that we're heading for a golden age. I believe that much of what goes for conspiracy theory, the talk of malevolent conspiracy theories, aimed and so on, this is these groups wanting us to go into a golden age, believing a golden age is to come, believing that certain rituals are required to trigger that golden age. And yes, it is a yearning for getting back to the original greatness of a previous golden age.
What I always say, Troy, is that in the end, everything comes back to the beginning.
Yeah, well, this is the idea of a the circle of history, the wheel of time. And again, we come back to the concept of rings and so on like that. For your listeners, in esoteric traditions, there is a golden age followed by a silver age, followed by a bronze age, and we are currently believed by esoteric tradition to be in what's called the Iron Age, the least attractive of the ages. And so for many occult beliefs, and there are also esoteric beliefs that are not malevolent, who yearn for this idea of getting back to an age that is a lack of want for humanity as a whole, where we don't have wars, we don't have the killings that go on. Unfortunately, there is this occult element that believes that mankind has to actually undergo this transformation, the next step in evolution, so to speak, in order to trigger a new golden age. And that's where you get your idea of not only ritual on a group basis, but on a mass basis, the idea of war as a form of ritual.
War is kind of like a blood sacrifice ritual, as far as I know. That's why all the soldiers' uniforms are adorned with satanic symbols, like that that sort of three-headed spear that Girl Scouts and stuff like that wear. That's all over military uniforms. And allegedly, that's like the tail of Satan, so that when you die in your blood while wearing that uniform, the occultists believe that it counts as a blood sacrifice to their dark lord.
I don't know that particular story. I would not be surprised if that is an element. As I say, so much of what you find in various occults, I mean, and they vary from one group to the other. There's no consistency there. But at the end of the day, it gets really serious when they start actually putting into practice these loony concepts of blood sacrifice and so on, and it's what they're trying to trigger. What I discuss in it is this idea of human history as a cult ritual. I emphasize that the ebb and flow of human history has to be manipulated by these people as part of what they see as a giant multi-generations long ritual leading to a point when the supposed golden age will be triggered.
Well, in that case, I would act under the assumption that they have many more events, rituals, and triggers that are planned that they're going to pull off before this alleged golden age starts to ensue. So after the break, Troy, if you know anything about what they have planned or whatever, we want to really get into that, because ultimately the real problem with society I find now is that they all claim, oh, we don't know the future, you know, any of that kind of stuff. And the fact of the matter is, you don't need to know the future. You can know what other people plan for the future, and that's just as good anyway. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Troy McLaughlin as my guest, talking about the Satan Death Cult. And we'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I've been everywhere. Yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, the show that goes where others fear to tread. And I also have just, I want to implement a new rule, and I'm terrible at following rules, so I'll probably only do it this once. I want to ask my guest exactly what he wants to talk about that he generally doesn't get to, because there's distractions, there's all sorts of things that happen in radio. You don't get to where you want to go sometimes. So Troy, fire away. You wanted to talk about the financial elite.
Vinny, thanks. Sat and Death Cult was really written mostly to provide people with a tool for reacting against to all the information that is bound up in mythology and Saturn theory. It's one thing to know that planets were once in a different configuration in ancient times, but how do we use that today? What are the implications for today? And what I found was that there is a direct connection between what is going on in the financial world today and the control that the financial world has over us today, going back to this mythical golden age and how people behaved back then. And the key to it is understanding what it really meant to humanity as a whole to lose this original sun, Saturn, at the time when doomsday arrived and Saturn was driven from its position in the north. And probably the best way to sum it up is to use the biblical term, and that is that at the fall, the famous creation epic in Genesis, after the fall, mankind would have to, by the sweat of his brow, would he make the earth yield its fruits. And looking at this, the nature of the Golden Age in ancient times created a situation where people didn't have to sweat to make the earth yield its fruits. And after the Golden Age, if people did have to, you would get certain types that basically didn't want to sweat. They came up with the idea, if I could live like the Golden Age used to be, maybe I can get everybody else to do the work for me. Does that make sense?
Basically, they got the idea that, hey, everybody else should be my slave, and I'll just sit around, get fat, live forever, do nothing.
That's right. That's exactly the way I see things starting to shape up. Of course, they have a dilemma at that point in time. They can force people to do stuff, in which case they need a bunch of heavies. They're willing to work for them. This is not as efficient simply because you need 10 people really to do the work for you to have one person be able to sit back and kick back and not do any work. So how do you keep 10 people in control when you're the one? And the system of control becomes the most basic measure of work that we have, which is called money. And essentially, we arrive at a situation in history where those who seek to get other people to do the work for them realize they can use money as a control mechanism to produce that work. And that control mechanism is what I call in Saturn Death Cult a debt-based money system. And a debt-based money system is any form of currency issued that is done at interest. And essentially what I'm describing in today's world is a central banking model. Now, what I believe Saturn Death Cult gives people is the origins for how this central banking model came into existence down through the centuries and the grip that it has on us today. The good news is that I believe that it's imploding under its own under its own system, that any debt-based financial system ultimately reaches a point where it implodes under the weight of its own debt. And I think that we're actually
kind
in
a like
very interesting period of history.
It's kind of like an obese person who eats too much having their bed give way underneath them.
Yeah, basically you could say that. Unfortunately, some of us are going to be under that bed when it collapses and it's going to fall on top of us. But for those of us who prepare, we can get out from under it and laugh when the whole thing falls down.
Well, see, even if I was under the bed, I'd still laugh if it fell down on me.
Well, you know, this is one way that I hope people who read Saturn Death Cult, in so much conspiracy theory, we get this idea of a monolithic, impossible to fight conspiracy against humanity that's leading us to our doom, that's going to commit genocide for the sake of an elite and so on. I actually have come to the conclusion that the elite control mechanisms are so fatally flawed that we can really just sit back at this time, make our own preparations for ourselves, but sit back and watch as their system collapses, and hopefully those of us who do study into what can replace a debt-based system will be able to offer a different type of financial system that doesn't put people into debt slavery.
Well, I think that's simple. There's an extremely simple solution to that. Extremely. And Gaddafi, of all people, figured it out. What you do is you make charging interest illegal. So, and quite frankly, I think that would be quite interesting, because then we'd see all these central bankers who do nothing but charge interest in jail. So what would happen is the criminal cartel, who are currently indebting our countries to no end, would all be in jail. Now, wouldn't that be a grand, grand idea of justice, that those who actually frack up society wind up spending the rest of eternity locked up with a big, scary cellmate named Bubba, who will give them lessons in certain things that you can't mention on FCC-regulated radio. Oh, yeah. Hey, that actually made me feel good. Just getting that out there. This is my true desire, can't you tell?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is what I think is the true hope for a true golden age, for humanity, is basically to see the merchant banking system, as we know it, completely eradicated from the affairs of men.
So an iron cage for the golden age. There we go. All sussed. We figured it out, Troy.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, there is a flip side to all this, and my assessment that basically, if we can use history as a mirror, as an indication of where we're going, we are set for a lot of pain to come as a result of this collapse. It's not going to be pretty. Too many people are going to be unprepared. And a lot of people that I read have pointed to the French Revolution as an example of what we could be heading to. A lot of people invoke the fall of Rome. I would actually urge people to look at what happened in the 1340s when the great Florentine banking houses collapsed in Europe. It was not a pretty situation in those days. Of course, what we know is that it all led to what became known as the Black Death, and humanity in Europe, at least. But, you know, the Black Death was something that was felt as far afield as Africa and China. It reshaped the European continent, and I think we're heading for a very similar scenario if we're not careful.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And in that scenario with Florentine, I think the real problem with the Black Death was they had all their eggs in the same basket. And so that's what I call eggs Florentine.
Droll. Very droll.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I come up with some awful, awful jokes. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to see more awful Vinnie Eastwood jokes, if you go to the vinnieeastwoodshow.com, under the humor section, there's a little thing called jokes there. So you can also make your friends really go, oh, and put their hands in their head and put their hands over their face as well. Face palm. Yeah, that's what I am. I'm the face palm joke meister. But anyway, Troy, we've come to kind of the end of the road here. I would love it if you would plug your website nice and quickly so that the people can actually go and see you more. As well as, ladies and gentlemen, I have scheduled with Troy over the break to have him back on the show In March, so the first week of March, he'll be on in the middle of the week. I think it'll be Tuesday the 6th of March in the United States, which will be Wednesday the 7th of March in New Zealand. So, Troy, plug your website.
Thanks, Vinny. SatanDeathCult.com is the website, and there is a Kindle book version of much of the information and plus more held on the website. Get a copy if you want to find out more details of what we've been discussing.
Indeed. And when we have Troy back on, we'll be having him for 2 hours because, like the movie 2012 says, I wish we had more time. Thanks, Troy, and you have yourself a fabulous afternoon, my friend.
Thanks very much, Vinny. It's been a pleasure.
Women and children, front line, log on, tune in, stand and be counted. Wounded stationed in the belly of the vulture. Watch your back, there's no civilians. Women, children, front line, listen. Consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Thrown together 2 hours and talk radio, the Fly by the Seat of the Pants show. My very special guest is Stephen, the voice, Cuck. Cuck, welcome to the program.
Hey man, how you doing?
I'm really good. So, just explain to the audience, who the cuck are you, and what the cuck have you been up to?
You like that? Actually, I just moved to Hawaii probably about 2.5 weeks ago, and I happened to stumble upon your show, and I really dig it, dude. I guess it was last week I heard you say, I'm not here to wake people up, but I'm here to keep the ones that are awake sane. And that's something I have been pondering for a while now, and you've been helping me out in a lot of ways there.
Well, you're... It's
So please hear my plea. Unity, please don't desert me. We need your sweetness like the comb of the honeybee. Hear my plea. Unity.
Ladies and gentlemen, we had the uber technical glitch right there at the American Freedom Radio studio. There was some description of internet outage, and I could relate to that because this morning, before coming on the show, no kidding, my internet cut out like 11 times. No kidding. There is something messed up. And well, the good thing is, though, as long as everybody's messed up together, we feel some kind of unity. So I hope you enjoyed that special extended edition of the Unity song that we just impromptu played while we were cut off air. Back to the interview with Stephen Cuck. And sorry, Stephen, about that. What was I saying? Oh, yeah.
You were talking about people being awake and stuff.
Well, I find that being awake is actually quite a big challenge, don't you?
Do you?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, it seems like a challenge to look sane to the rest of the world, to be honest with you. They're like, put this guy in a loony bin right here.
Oh, yeah. There is an element of that. And you always wind up getting, called names. And people misinterpret things that you say.
Yeah, that's correct. But also, it's like they've been, I heard you say earlier, you know, religion kills spirituality. Well, it also builds walls. Actually, in a lot of ways, say, I was raised Christian, and I try to speak to Christian brothers and sisters, but they don't want to hear it. They think I'm crazy. Religion comes from the Greek word religios, which means to conquer and divide. And it's like they've been pumped with it for so long with traditions that, and they're so used to authority, even in a church, that it becomes a way of life and just submitting to it, you know, all the time, even if it's wrong, you know. And after a while that, I mean, it just so happens our generation, aren't you close to 27 or 28 years old? Somewhere in there, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like our generation is a little more open to it, more so than our parents and our grandparents, you know. And I honestly believe it's an intuition and a synchronicity of just when we were born, and it, maybe we are the spirit of the age, you know.
Well, I don't know. We're certainly like one of the most interesting generations that's ever been born. Born into a generational a generation of computer games, movies, internet, and that kind of thing. Game consoles, smartphones. I think our generation has to contend with more distractions than any other generation throughout the entirety of human existence. And it's interesting, though, because despite the fact that we have cumulatively more distractions than any other generation has ever had, it means we also have cumulatively more access to knowledge and thus power than any other generation has, because we've grown up with this stuff. We know how to use it.
Exactly. Well, what do you want to talk about today, man? I was kind of thinking about talking a little bit about the 1% and my theories. And I would like everyone to go and study theirself and not just take my word for things, but I truly believe us as a race, the human race, it's not about color. I believe truly that the 1% possibly is a different race than us, because noble bloodlines. Why is it that they'll only let nobles breed with nobles, and you know, like a prince, you know, with another princess, you know? And I truly believe that that's done for a reason, and they're smarter than us. I mean, what's your take on it?
I think that they're all inbred scum.
Yeah.
And they're dumber than anybody else.
Yeah.
But they have enough money to hire the people who are smarter than everybody else to do all their crazy, retarded bidding for them.
Yeah, that does make some sense. Let me ask you something. Can you hear something in the background?
A little bit. I mean, it sounds like it's coming on your side, like you've got I don't know, some kind of a freezer running in the background. Are you just chilling, are you?
I'm just chilling, man. I got some Fosters, you know. No, not really. But I don't know, man. Have you ever studied into the Book of Enoch any?
No. I have not. I don't actually read generally. What I do is instead I interview the authors, but unfortunately the author of the Book of Enoch isn't around no more.
Yeah. Well, I don't read very often either, unless it has something to do with this, and it seems like I can't stay interested in it. But I truly believe that because you can reference back to the Bible where it says there were giants, David and Goliath. Why was God's people fighting the giants? And I truly believe it was because angels looked down on the wives of men, and you could call them extraterrestrials, angels, whatever feels right to fit your belief system, and they gazed down, and they traded secrets of heaven for the wives of men, and they started breeding with them, and they made these mighty giants. Now, if you took what's a big dog in New Zealand, like what's a great dog? Great Dane? Is that good?
Well, yeah, that's a great dog.
Hence great Dane. Okay. Well, say if you took one of those and you just bred them with like a mediocre-sized dog, after a while, their offspring is going to be bred down to a normal size. Who's to say that that's not where the 1% came from, you know? Who's to say that's why they hate us so much and want to control us, you know? I mean, I feel like the flood was sent not because men were so in depth with sin. I feel like that the bloodlines were tarnished. And I believe not that Noah was the purest person, but I believe that he had the purest bloodline, because actually it speaks on how he actually had quite a bit of a drinking problem. So, I mean, and I truly believe that it says in Genesis chapter 6 that there would be a flood sent to kill them all, but it also says it didn't kill them all. The Nephilim was still left. And I honestly believe that's the 1%. I mean, a lot of Christians wouldn't tell you that, you know.
Well, I call it's There's a few elements here that I'd like to address. First of all, it's not really the 1% that are ruthlessly screwing everybody over. Statistically speaking, 4% of the Earth's population are clinically diagnosable psychopaths. So if anything, they're the 4%. The people who have no empathy, don't actually feel any emotional consequences for their actions and have no concern for other people. That's the 4%. I wanted to start up a new chart. We are the 96%.
You should get a t-shirt and put it on the t-shirt with Ron Paul on the front. And then,
There's the element there is basically what a lot of people believe, and Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com has investigated this thoroughly, and is an incredible researcher. And what he says is that the elite have very sophisticated, very long-standing breeding programs. And what these breeding programs are designed to do is to filter out, just like you said about how you breed a small dog with a large dog, eventually the large dog kind of disappears. So what they've done is they've actually been breeding non-psychopaths with psychopaths, so that eventually the non-psychopath disappears. And so all of these people throughout the bloodline who wind up becoming our presidents, prime sinisters, CEOs of Rockefeller-owned corporations and Rothschild banks and stuff like that are born without any empathy, without any concern for the human race, and without the human condition, essentially. So in a sense, you're right. They are a different race, and I believe there's only one race. It's the human race, and we're all brothers and sisters of that puppy. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Bonkers.
Spending my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless sanity give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the most bonkers 2-hour talk bracket radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Stephen, what was his name? Stephen Cuck is my guest, but he seems to have dropped off. And one thing we're going to branch on is like an element, right, that you don't normally get to talk about on radio. And so I asked Stephen, you know, what would you like to talk about? Something that you haven't talked about before, or you don't get the chance to, or people won't let you talk about it, or whatever. And it came to the Rothschilds owning Israel. Now, as far as I know, the Rothschilds own everything. You know, there's like what? 1, 2, possibly 3 countries in the entire world that don't have a Rothschild-owned central bank issuing the public currency? That's how deep their fingers go into the pie called the human race. That's how deep it goes. They own you. As George Carlin says, they own everything. They own all the important land, probably including Israel. They have long since paid for the politicians, the businesses, judges, everything. How do you fight an enemy that owns everything? Well, just because you own something doesn't mean you can protect it. For instance, have you ever been burgled? I have, several times. And I used to own a lot of stuff and had tens of thousands of dollars worth of things stolen, some of which wasn't even mine, that I was holding on to for friends, you know, like stereo equipment, etc. And even though I trusted my flatmates, it turns out it was all of them. They stole everything. Never underestimate the power of the enemy from within. Because they can get you very easily. Despite the fact that the Rothschilds own everything, despite the fact that they employ copious quantities of scumbags, any single one of those people, if turned against the New World Order, can do irrecoverable damage to their infrastructure, their schemes, their property, everything. That's actually how weak they are. Any one person who turns can do an untold amounts of damage. And at this point in time, people are hoping against hope, that these scumbags go down, and go down hard, and go down soon. Because the fear element that is trying to be perpetuated by mainstream media and everything else that we don't like is hotting up. And the reason why it's hotting up is because they've realized that people are waking up, that people are thinking more. Fear stops you from thinking. That's why they've just gotten everything. They're pulling out all the stops now. I was talking with Deborah Dupre last night. She's down in the Gulf. And boy, is she getting sick. You can't go near the Gulf of Mexico without starting to feel ill, basically. That's how polluted it is from that ongoing Gulf of Oil Kano crisis. It's unbelievable. Fukushima. We had a massive, massive radiation spike in New Zealand after the El Nino effect up in the northern hemisphere pushed the high air pressure down towards the southern hemisphere. And as a result, all that Fukushima radiation that's up in the atmosphere since blowing up in a spectacular nuclear explosive type fashion is now in our neck of the woods. And we even had a report from a guy as far south as Dunedin, where he was outside with a Geiger counter, and it was going off the scale. It was nuts. And he was like, whoa. And he was standing in the wind. I was just like, whoa, I'm getting the heck out of the wind. You know, went inside, left his Geiger counter out. Reader didn't go down any. We're literally, if you're in New Zealand right now, allegedly, we're bathing in radiation. You know, take a bar of soap with you as you go outside. Wear a hoodie, you know. Wear plastic bags around your shoes. You scrub yourself down before you go into people's places. This is what was recommended people do when the Fukushima radiation hit the continental US. I remember George Fertitel, G for T for short, wearing a shower cap. And goodness knows what else, sitting in his car in Los Angeles with a breathing apparatus around his mouth, talking about the Fukushima radiation. And it's not a joke. He was freaking serious. And it still is. We're all poisoned. But, fortunately, there are many antidotes to radiation, including an article that has just been sent the other day. Cannabis. That's right. It can be used as a radiation treatment therapy. You can get that crap out of your bloodstream, out of your thyroid or anything by ingesting cannabis, or quite likely, and I haven't looked into this terribly large amount, but I know for a fact that this is how it works, cannabis resin, which is extremely high potency. And Rick Simpson and Bob Millamede have been using this remedy to great effect, getting rid of everything from cancer to spinal problems and various other things, and with great success, unbelievable success. We had Bob Millamede on the show not too long ago, actually, and he showed me a PDF of one of their patients that they've treated for lesions on his head. There are about three or four massive ones that look like just rotting, cancerous, dead, bulbous, wart-like, horrific, the most disgusting stuff that you've ever heard. Some the size of a fist coming out of his head.
and then you have a look at the progress photos as they apply the cannabis oil to the area. They get smaller and smaller and smaller, and by the final photo, not only are they gone, but it looks like fresh, beautiful, newborn baby skin had formed over the top of the guy's head where all the previous damage had been. Unbelievable. So naturally, they made cannabis illegal. I mean, what's the cancer industry going to do now? What do they give you? And this is funny. Here was a story in from Natural News. A lady who was having chemotherapy, radioactive iodine ingestion. That's what they do. They irradiate iodine and get you to drink it as your treatment for cancer. She set off a radiation alarm because she's like a walking dirty bomb. Everybody who does that treatment is. It's unbelievable. You're irradiating everybody around you. So, you know, these things are all done very, very intentionally to mess with the human race. As we're talking about the breeding programs, what corrupts DNA like nothing else? You guessed it. Radiation. Where is there now radiation like nothing else? You guessed it. Everywhere. You know, we're sitting here. It's just like we're cooking in our own juices. Like it's some kind of a leprosy jacuzzi out here. It's unbelievable. And you wonder, and this is why people don't believe it, of course. Who would be that crazy to do it? And the answer is incredibly crazy sociopaths. You know, the answer's in the question. You wouldn't do it, would you? Because you're not a fracking insane, power-hungry person with $1 trillion to spare and access to all the covert secret health extension, life extension, various other kinds of extensions that you can't mention on FCC radio. You know, these people don't give a flying frack about us at all. They want us dead, quite literally. Preferably in a way that we won't notice. My sister, and I mentioned this on the show the other day, talked to a German couple, old German couple. We had a exchange student from Germany come and stay with our family when I was a young lad, and my sister Janine, she speaks German and French, and I think might be another couple of languages, but she went over to Germany to speak with these old grandparents of hers, and they didn't want to talk about, you know, what happened during World War II and the Nazis and all that kind of stuff. She just wanted to know what it was like. So she pressured them and just said, look, I'm not going to get another chance at understanding what really went on during that time. And this is how it went down, according to them. Life was going on as normal. Everything was fine. The Jewish sector of town was bustling away as normal. They didn't know too many people down at that end of town anyway, you know. It was just not part of their daily life. They weren't involved in the Jewish community. They were just normal German citizens poddling along, having nice, happy day, eating bratwurst and mashed potatoes and what have you. Then one day, they were all gone. They're like, well, what happened? They must have just moved on somewhere, you know. Surely that's what happened. And they rationalize it away. Try and find a logical, non-psychopathic reason for the disappearance of an entire community. That's how innocent people are. A suspicious mind is a healthy mind. An innocent mind is an exploitable mind, ultimately. And that's what is going to happen to people if we don't stop these New World Order sociopathic, criminal, psychopathic scumbaggery filth. That's what's going to happen. We'll just suddenly, all of us, they won't be targeting us based on our race specifically anymore. Not that Jewish is a race, it's actually a religion. It was Nazi ideology that postulated that idea that Jews were a race. You know, it's all classic eugenics. It'll be based upon how active you are. It'll be based upon whether or not you're willing to submit. had a good show yesterday with Michael Badnarik, and he took a conformity test. Okay, like, how willing are you to conform to other people? It's basically just a list of questions to see how influenceable you are and how much you are willing to go along with the crowd. He scored a zero on the test. Okay, those kind of people who will not conform, who will not be slaves, who will not allow criminals to run their government, to destroy their lives, to kill their families, those kind of people, they will be the ones targeted. There is already allegedly lists, like the blue list, the yellow list, the red list, whatever, varying degrees. You know, one list is like the people who need to be taken out right away. The second list is the people who are like, they may resist or something like that. So they'll be taken out just in case. And then the third list is those people who are dumb, stupid, slave, brainwashed people who will, and this is the vast majority, will do anything a uniform or a lab coat tells them to do without question. Those are the people that will be left alone. So if you're not one of those people, and if you listen to this show, there's like no chance that you are, you had best be prepared for what's coming. You had best be informed. So when you start noticing things like that little German couple noticed, you'll know what's happening. Okay, if there was alternative media like we have today, back then, I'm sure that there would be some kind of German Vinnie Eastwood going, "I shake coin that one guy, so what I got to ask, come back at him." You know, that's basically what I see happening. Is again, we talk about the revolutions, right? Revolution means to go in a circle. Okay, you ever been in a car? You've got RPM, revolutions per minute. That's what revolution means. Go in a circle. You know, I don't want a revolution. I want some fracking evolution. Thank you. I don't like repeating things. More to the point, when people are telling me the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, I switch off because I'm not learning anything at all. When people are telling me something I don't know, that's when I start to pay real close attention to them. If I've already heard it before. Bear in mind, there's an awful lot of repetition that goes on out there, isn't there? Copious quantities of propaganda. And of course, I'm guilty of it myself, aren't I? Because when you're in talk radio, you say the same things over and over again. Because in a propagandistic fashion, in a Goebbelsian type German propaganda model, you have to repeat things often enough so that people will believe them. Isn't that interesting? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the most Goebbelsian 2 hours in talk radio, and we'll be right back just after this little break here.
Wednesday.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the sexiest 2 hours in talk radio. I had a question from the chat room. Why do I believe Jews are not a race? Well, first of all, I'm not a Nazi. That's part of the reason why I believe Jews are not a race, because the Nazis made it up. Secondly, the Jews have tribes. Okay, but the thing that holds them in common is not their blood or their heritage per se. It's actually the Jewish religion. You know, the Torah, that stuff that they read, the Jewish Bible, etc. That is what they practice. So people often say, "Oh, the Jews run the world." Well, no, they don't. Okay, because they don't practice the Jewish religion. When you look at the elite, the alleged Jews, you find that none of them are practicing Jews. They're all Satanists. Okay, they worship Satan himself, quite literally. And I'm not saying this is what I believe. This is what they believe. And they admit it in their own books, works, stuff like that. It's all public knowledge. Anybody can find this out for themselves. It's not a joke. They really do love Satan. They really do sacrifice children. They don't celebrate Jewish holidays, you know. They don't celebrate Yom Kippur. They don't have bar mitzvahs or anything like that. They don't practice the Torah. Hence, that's not a race. Okay, a Jew is a practicing Jew. There are many races that are tied to the Jewish religion. The Ashkenazi, which the last four letters are Nazi, incidentally, who there is, what else are they? Sephardi and various others. I believe there's 12 different tribes. Those are races. Yes, indeedy. Absolutely. Provable bloodline connections. That's a race. If they're bound together by religion, like, for example, are Christians a race of people? No, they're not. Are Muslims a race of people? No, they're not. Because you can be Muslim whether or not you're Arab, Persian, Caucasian, Asian, or Latin American. It doesn't matter. You can choose your religion regardless of your race. But of course, in some religions, they don't like particular races, do they? In fact, what was it? I think there was some kind of Christian pastor in the United States some time ago, like a black preacher or something, wanted to be a bishop, and they wouldn't let him because he was black or something like that. So there's still a lot of racial discrimination within religion, allegedly. And I personally don't really have much of a problem with religion on the whole. You know, the vast majority of the time, the religious people that I know are good, decent people who have moral and ethical codes that they follow. They're relatively honest and conscientious. But of course, on the other hand, and this is not specific to religion, they just simply won't be awake to a degree. You know, like they'll ignore things and instead refer to the Bible and say that this is my code, this is exactly what I follow to the letter. And I feel that you should never, under any circumstances, live your life by one book, regardless of how fracking accurate or incredibly good read that book is. Like, for example, I wouldn't call myself Muad'Dib and try to blow things up with sound waves because I read Dune and really liked it, okay? That's freaking nuts, okay? But there's so many religions out there, and religion's a very touchy topic, so I'll probably get some abusive emails after this, because I don't practice any religion. Not any specific. Like I was born into a Christian family, and the only way my mum could get me to go to church each week with her, and my dad didn't go, was if she bought me an ice cream afterwards. She literally had to bribe me to go to church, and after the bribe stopped, so did the church. And that's basically how that works out, because I never got anything out of it. It bored the living, pardon the pun, Shiite Muslim out of me, and it didn't make any sense to me at the time because I was a kid, you know. Kids don't understand religion at all. Like the most hated family in America, for example, they hold up signs that says God hates fags and that kind of stuff. Reporters go up to the children and go, "What is a fag?" And the child doesn't have any fracking clue, and they're holding a sign that says God hates him, okay, and repeating it over and over again. Children don't have the capacity of understanding those sorts of religious concepts. I think that ultimately, when you're an adult, you can make a choice about whether or not you worship a god or how you live your life according to the Quran or the Bible or the Torah. You know, you can make that choice, and nobody should ever be able to force you into making a choice or tell you that there's consequences for not making that choice, because that just sounds like intimidation to me. You know, you have to be Christian or you're going to hell. It's just like, dude, do you think the Bible tells people to go around telling other people that they're under threat unless they live their life in such a way? Now, allegedly it does, or it doesn't. I'm not sure. I haven't read it entirely. Not 100% sure if I'm even qualified to comment on it. But I do know that the Christians that I talk to who try to convert me and tell me that I'm going to hell switch me right off, because you don't want to listen to people who tell you what to do, do you? In fact, those people are fracking nuts, the born-agains. And every born-again Christian that I've met has been a little bit crazy, all right? And that might be a statistical anomaly, or it might be the status quo. That's how it goes, right? For example, I was working in a telco one time. And in sales, sometimes you have to give customers a little bit of BS, because they don't trust you if you tell the truth. But if you lie to them, then you can actually get the truth out of them and then help them save some money on their phone bills. It was really weird. And I told this to the born-again Christian lady next to me, and she goes, "Oh, well, you don't have any morals or ethics or anything, you're going to hell." And then I talked to her about that. She yelled that out in front of the whole office. And so I went into the lunchroom with her, you know, just privately, and said, "Hey, look, you can't really say that kind of stuff to me, especially in front of everybody else." And she goes, "No, I never said that. I never said that." It's just like, these people are fracking crazy out of their minds, you know? Some people are just like, they don't have any idea what the heck they're doing off in their life. And because they don't have any idea, they cling to a book to solve all their problems for them. It's nuts. We have a caller on the line here. His name is Russell from Kansas. Russell, welcome to the program. Russell, are you there?
Yeah. Actually, my name's not Russell. It was kind of awkward. I'm on an internet phone. Actually, I'd like to keep my name kind of unanimous right now, or anonymous right now.
Sure. Your internet is cutting out really, really badly there, man.
All right, I'm sorry. Maybe if I talk a little bit slower, it may come in clear. Was that any better?
I can tell what you're saying, but the audio quality is pretty bad. But we're almost to the end of the show, so I don't see any reason in hanging up on you. So shoot, whatever you want to say.
All right. I find a little bit of what you were saying actually quite offensive. I do know that Christianity as a whole to outsiders is very offensive, because within the Bible it says, you know, all men are sinners. And then it says, you know, the wages for sin is death. So that means anybody that is human deserves to go to hell and deserves that eternal death, because we are all sinners. So, of course, everybody's like, "Well, don't say this kind of crap to me, because, I mean, why are you condemning me?" Well, we only say that to let you know that there's a loophole. I wouldn't really say a loophole, but there's a way to get through it. And that way is through Jesus, and that's what makes Christianity so great, is that there is hope. So it's not necessarily us condemning you, but us saying, "Listen, there is hope for you. You've already been condemned."
Yeah, and I agree with you, and thanks for your call. I just wanted to wrap up the show here. I actually agree with you, and when I look at the principles of Jesus, being honest, loyal, throwing the bankers out of the temple, and taking care of humanity, that kind of thing, I follow all of those principles, but I don't define myself as Christian. And also, say the what's it called? The Quran has outlawed hypocrisy, and I don't engage in hypocrisy, or at least I try not to. And if I do, I beat myself up about it. But I'm not a Muslim. In fact, I find that I exude all the positive elements, or at least a lot of them, of many different religions, and yet do not define myself as being part of any of them. I simply try to live my life for the good of humanity as a whole. And I'm not sure I'll go to hell for that, but I guess we'll find out.
Well, I guess you would find out. However, I do have kind of an answer to maybe give you some forewarning for that. See, the Bible in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8, it does say, through grace, you are saved through faith. But it's not by works. So just by being a good person, you can't get into heaven. So if you're going to even be a good person, that doesn't automatically, like, save you from hell. So you have to have a relationship with Jesus, with God. You have to claim Jesus as your Savior. That's the only way to avoid hell. The only way. And so I find it kind of, I mean, I don't want to, like, call anybody stupid or anything, but I just kind of find it, like, weird that some people wouldn't at least look into it. If there's a certain few verses that just say, okay, listen, here's what's going to happen, and here's your only way around it, I'd at least look into it a little bit.
Yeah. And I have. And apparently it's about living your life and through the grace of God and the certain rules that you follow. And as far as I know, I'm not breaking any of them. So I'm sweet. Or at least that's my opinion. I could be wrong. But anyway, thank you very much for your call. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in. And we'll see you again sometime at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.